You are listening to episode 79, Healing Trauma with Expressive and Play Therapies with Marshall Lyles.
Welcome to Play Therapy Community Podcast, providing connection, information, and inspiration to child therapists all around the world. Here's your host, a licensed psychotherapist, a registered play therapist, and my mom, Jackie Flynn.
This episode is brought to you by EMDR and Play Therapy Integration Support. Are you an EMDR-trained therapist that works with children and teens? I'd love to help you integrate play therapy techniques throughout all eight phases so that your child and teen clients can fully experience the immense healing power of EMDR therapy. Visit JackieFlynnConsulting.com to check out my free webinars, EMDRIA-approved courses, certification opportunities, case consultation options, individual and group, and much more. Children are not miniature adults, so working with them in a developmentally appropriate way can make a world of difference. Again, visit JackieFlynnConsulting.com.
Well, hi, Marshall. Thank you so much for being on the Play Therapy Community Podcast. I'm a huge fan of yours. I was introduced to you by Tammy Van Hollander, which loves you. And since then, it is apparent that you have a huge fan club, and you're known for your, definitely for your sand tray work, your EMDR work, and just your heart felt work through poetry and probably a gazillion other things. So I feel honored to have you here. Let me have you introduce yourself. Tell people who you are and what you do.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to be with you. We have people in common who, so I know how adored you are, Jackie, and I appreciate the invitation. I'm Marshall, and I am a play therapist in Austin, Texas. I've been practicing here in Austin the whole of my 20 years in my career. Most of my practice has been in the world of trauma. I've worked in institutions and practices and agencies and nonprofits, all the things that you can do. And it's almost always been in the world of trauma, and usually the crossover of attachment woundedness and trauma. Really of all ages. Kids aren't the only population that I treat. I'm a marriage and family therapist, and so a lot of my work is done through a systemic lens. And my favorite part of the play world are really the expressive interventions, like you named, of sand and clay and poetry, that they're personal passions of mine, and you know, things I study outside of therapy, and love the crossover when they come into individual, family, group work.
Mm-hmm. So you really treat the whole array. I love that. I didn't know that you work with couples. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So the whole family. I know as we're recording this, we're on video as we're recording this, and in the background is literally the most beautiful expressive art studio that I don't even think I could have imagined anything that incredible. The shelves, I see crayons and markers and pencils and sand tray miniatures and books, and I think I see candles. I'm not sure what's.
Yeah.
That's just breathtaking, stunning. And you're located in Texas, that's right?
Yeah, right in the middle in Austin. And even in the part of town where this workshop of mine is, it's kind of an artsy part of town. And so the outside of the building is, it's an old mission. And so it has all of this really interesting, quirky history, really congruent with what you would think about Austin in general. And I'm a believer that when people come in, especially to learn about creative therapies, that I think if you can walk in and feel inspired and soothed and, you know, a little bit of kind of like your creativity gets to be carbonated, you know, that like little things start popping forward as you see this on the wall, or, you know, that material to engage with, So even in the way that I display things, I like to try and make it look like art that's about to be used. And so all of my sand trays are arranged on pegboard hanging on the wall and of all the different shapes. And so it looks a bit like an art installation. So you come in, choose your shape that you need, and then head on to the sand section, which is all in the like bulk food dispensers. Mm-hmm. So you can go up to whichever kind of sand you need for that day and fill up your own tray. And kind of Willy Wonka your way through some expressive play.
Wow, that's incredible. And you even have opportunities for work with clay as well, right?
I do. About half of the center here is used for ceramics and pottery. And so primarily, I personally actually started my clay journey several years ago as part of some physical therapy. I have muscular dystrophy, and so I'm often looking for things to keep dexterity. And so I love the arts. I had never studied clay formally. And so maybe a decade ago, I started taking hand building classes, learning to build things from slabs of clay or from different designs, starting with pinch pots and sculpting. And it was sensory and flexibility wise really important for maintaining my functioning. And then I started then studying with some people about how to integrate that work into therapeutic practice. And so a lot of the things I stumble into, I think we all do in this field, is because we experienced the healing power. And then that weaves its way into our conviction, so that when we bring it into our therapeutic work, it's offered with such an invisible belief, you know, that I think that's so much of the effectiveness, is people aren't just choosing the material, they're choosing the part of us that believes in that material, something that can hold and help. And I love that. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, it's like a felt sense that goes with it that's far beyond something that we could have learned in a classroom or a training.
Yep, absolutely.
One thing that, and we talked about it a little bit before we hit record, is the organization there. I have to say, I'll pan around. That's one thing that's a little bit of a struggle for mine that looks different than yours. So I have a true appreciation for how you keep it so organized. And you said that would be something that sometimes people may be surprised about you. I remember years ago, I was in the military and I was a chaplain's assistant for a while in Korea, and they had us straightening up the books in the pews. And the person that was directing us to do that said that people come there for a sense of peace, and having that orderliness was important, and it just contributed to their sense of peace. And now I know the phrase neuroception of safety. And yeah. I think about how organized your place is and how you just exude that neuroception of safety, and how that's the space where healing comes from. And you just kind of talked about how we have like this, we have healed from these modalities ourselves, and we're able to really come from a deeper place, which also is, you know, authentic, which is safe. It's beautiful.
And you know, it parallels the attachment world so beautifully too, because, you know, so many of the moments that clients are bringing us and asking if we're trustworthy enough to contain and hold and be a part of their ground with, they're held in these pockets of disorganization within them. And I think there is something about existing in a space that metaphorically says, I have enough order to be able to make sense with you of what you're bringing, but it has to stop short of rigid, because then that starts to set this perfectionistic standard. And so I joke with myself frequently, if I ever start having chalk outlines of where things belong on the shelves, we've crossed into danger. Like, that is no longer going to be offering safety. But if someone can come in and say, oh, I feel the competent holding in this space, it's both alive and lived in, and inspirational and accessible. That's what we're aiming for.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me of like Dr. Siegel, how he says like that continuum of rigidity and chaos, how right in the middle of the river there, it sounds like that's what you're describing. Not so rigid where you have chalk lines, like the haunted house goes right here, the red dragon over here, but it's organized enough to where it doesn't set off that, just that feeling of chaos inside of people. I think a lot of times people come to us with the feeling of chaos.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think there are a lot of ways to offer that, you know, honestly, because when I have the great joy of having been able to study with Bonnie Badenoch, Summon. And when you go into Bonnie's home where all of her sanctuary supplies are moved about the house, you know, they're not always in the exact place. Like when you return them, you put them in this holding tray. And then she says she listens to where do they need to be next.
Oh, wow.
But there's still a thoughtfulness, you know, in the experience. And so it's what you sense when you walk in. And so some people, you know, believe that that comes from predictability. And some people believe that just comes from having considered, you know, and allowing these materials to be engaged in relationship and listening to them. As well as, you know, what has been the norm or standardized. It's got to be congruent with your internal presentation of organization.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good point. I think I just recently read something of her somewhere I heard the concept of having the miniatures choose you rather than choose the miniatures, just kind of feeling that energy. And it really does have like a visceral sense to it. It's amazing. Sanctuary therapy is incredible. One thing that I'm thinking about, I just had an aha moment. You said you started off with the clay to support the dexterity, and you create miniatures. Like your miniatures are so unique and breathtaking, and you actually have sets. Could you talk a little bit about that, about the process and, you know, how you even come up with the ideas and that piece?
Yeah. That was also kind of accidental. I sometimes worry that someone would go look at my website and think that I had some power of forethought that all of this would come together one day. That is not at all how life worked for me. but I started when I was in clay, and I would sit down with my teacher. She would say, what are we interested in building today? And I would explain to her trees. I would say, I need trees, but you know, I have standard trees. I need a tree that someone would look at and then have to pause for a moment and say, is that a home or a tree, or is it both? And I would explain to her the kind of metaphor, and then we would start playing together on, you know, how to let something be open-ended in the way that it's seen and how it can offer invitation. And that then started showing up in my collection. So as people would come to train with me, they would say, could you make me a this or that? And so over time, that just became more a part of what service I offered, so that I could margin out time of my day to do the pottery work and be able to contribute from a different part of myself to the community. And I'm married to an incredible businesswoman, and so my wife will hear, you know, things and say, well, if that was on the website then, and how about if, and so we now partner with different other artists of different materials and offer their items on the website, as well as things that we custom make. And then some people are a part of a monthly subscription, and so you can get miniatures each month that are all around a theme, you know, and we try to make them unique and things that, you know, maybe you didn't even know you needed in your collection. And some of them are handmade by artists or by me, and others are things we found from in other places, and then those come with some prompts so that you could see how they might then speak to you, like how the miniatures can inspire prompts for you. And so it's been a playful part of the project that I get to spend some time doing.
Wow, that's incredible. So you create these miniatures and you make a theme, and some of the themes are handmade by you, and it may include other artists that have contributed, but it could be something that when someone purchases it, they don't know how their clients are going to use it. I think that's surprising to a lot of us, like, oh, I never thought of that rat as, or I remember one time somebody chose a skeleton and they said it reminded them of their strength because they have bones. And I put the skeleton in there thinking, oh, this would be good for grief work, but it was good for resourcing as well. But you create these sets and people can get a monthly subscription and then get these sets, add them to their collection, and it can really kind of, in with directives, you said prompts that they can use, and then it could just expand their, I guess, their mindset on what's possible.
And I sneak in some poems I've written every once in a while or things into the box. And, you know, part of what I hope is it could really nurture someone's collection, but I really love the thought of maybe it creating just a moment of delight for a therapist to get to open the box and see the theme and, you know, be able to open the things one at a time. And a lot of therapists will send back pictures of like a world they built immediately themselves. Wow. And it's really like this dialogue that I'm getting this great pleasure of having with, you know, other artists and therapists, and the way the two communities really can benefit each other. I feel really lucky. You know, I bet you feel this way, that to be in a moment where the career has been able to surprise me with the diversity that it can offer you, and the different ways that, you know, giftedness and inspiration and even need, you know, so some of this started because of my own physical need. It's really just mystical and wonderful in what we get to engage in.
Yeah, you know, what's coming to my mind is the impact of your reach, the amount of healing that you're able to do through creating those miniatures above and beyond what you would be able to do just in your office with your clients. So I think that's like a beautiful gift that you're giving to the world. Like every month. I mean, and I know you do that through your consultation services too. I literally could go on all day of the stuff that I've heard about you as a MDRIA approved consultant. You have that something special. And, you know, when I thought about doing this interview with you, you had posted something about your poetry. And I was like, how he does poetry too? Could this guy get any cooler? It's amazing. And then Jen told me about your poetry, about just how heartfelt it is. And you offered up a piece of poetry that we could provide to the Play Therapy members community. So I would love it if you could read that poetry just here.
I've been loving poetry my whole life. You know, as a kid, I think part of some of my, the way that part of my ability challenges showed up was I needed more and more ways to connect with something bigger, you know, and poetry just never stopped giving me that. It just becomes more and more cosmic. And so even I'm a little guy, and I found some journals recently of things I'd written when I was, you know, maybe 10. I got welcomed into that world with an elementary school teacher who nurtured that in me. And so it's been a part of my world again for a long time, but it's been a really private part until the last few years. And I've been studying the last year with the Institute for Poetic Medicine about, you know, how to be more intentional. And part of, you know, that program's requirement is that you get more courageous in your vulnerability about what you put into the world, your poetry. And so this one that I thought I would offer to the community and read to you is actually about privilege and something that has been coming up a lot in the last several months in my office. And a lot of my clients who come from privilege, it's become a therapeutic issue. Adults, teens, kids that have heard about it and try. I don't feel like I'm better than someone. I don't feel like I'm privileged, and understanding that it's not a feeling, that this has been something that's over generations been created. And so as a bit of kind of the burden I feel as an NFT is to find ways in those therapeutic moments to speak back to those parts of clients who are having trouble holding that. So I wrote a poem that kind of is allegorical in nature that walks through that. And it's called A Tale with Privilege.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it. Okay.
I'm tired of carrying these bags. Who can I get to haul this extra weight? You there, carry my bags. Ah, yes, this feels nice. I feel free to move now, and suddenly I realize I should never have had to toil so. You there, since you're already carrying my bags, carry my food. I don't like how you're looking at the food. It is still mine, and I will want to eat it all. Clearly, I'm more important because only one of us is walking free. I don't trust you with the food, but I also don't want to carry it myself. What a stressful problem, this leadership burden. Do you see how hard my life is? Plus, why do I have this coat on when I'm not cold at this exact moment? You there, since you already have my bags and food, take my coat. How frustrating for me that you move so slow. That's just more proof of my superiority. See how nimble I am? You should really be able to keep up. Now I'm suddenly aware that even the items in my pockets make me feel a little less free. You there, take these things from me. Nothing should hinder me. I'm too essential to be held back in the slightest. But don't use my things. Your role is to hold my baggage, but don't think you have the right to benefit from it. And stop asking for help. Do you think you're owed free handouts? After all of this time struggling to keep up, what have you done to deserve help? Just work harder like me. I'm getting so much done, all on my own. But I might one day need to know how to carry heavy weight. I haven't had the practice. I feel insecure even thinking about it. Surely I can find a teacher. You there.
Wow. Ooh. That is amazing. I feel that in my body. I can feel it in my arms. And I think at the time of this recording, there's a lot of, I think there's always some pain. But right now it's especially flared up.
Yeah. I feel that too. And I really feel that we carry some responsibility, you know, especially therapists who look like me and you.
Yeah.
To know that there are going to be people who need to hear from us.
Yeah.
Even if it's not your theory of choice, you know, to be psychoeducational or directive, your spirit needs to understand this weight so that can speak in moments to both hold someone's pain and, you know, challenge blindness. Because part of what my program taught me is if someone leaves therapy with you without having had contact with social justice, you're not just impacting the communities they interact with, it's not good for your client. Everyone grows more when they see more clearly. And so that comes in different voices. And so for me, I have clients that present the opening and I want to be able to gently be there with them, without treating them as fragile, but also trying to present information in a way that it can be integrated. So that's where I come from. I know other people are going to have different ways of being with that, but I'm hoping we're all struggling with it.
Yeah. And when you say that, I'm hoping we're all struggling with it. I think about the magnitude, the power of going out of our comfort zone, the power of hearing something and learning something that may be uncomfortable to hear or learn, the power of being aware of something that doesn't necessarily feel good to know about. Leaning into that discomfort can be our biggest areas of growth. And I know that's an area that there's some many painful pieces. And I know a lot of people are feeling pains in their own reality. And to put it to words like that, there's almost, and this is one thing that came up for me recently with the word privilege. It really speaks to sometimes there's a little bit of shame in having privilege. There's a little bit of shame in having, you know, a different circumstance where someone else is really, at, you know, experiencing some unthinkable circumstances.
I think a lot of a book I just read, Ed Tronick, and co-author, her last name is Gold, I'm blanking on her first name, they just released a book called The Power of Discord, and it's about finding, it's a good title, it's about finding comfort in those moments of mismatch, and within yourself as well as in relationship. And there's a line in there that says something like, eventually we have to find release from our anxious clinging to certainty. That has been circling in my mind, that I need to be ever increasing my tolerance of the uncertain, of that what I'm not sure I'm about to find, but I'm not afraid to look. And that's what I think arts do. I think it's what play does for kids. It opens up our ability to explore and to find, and to be less afraid of what we might encounter. And that's our joy, isn't it? What we get to do.
Yeah. The power of play. Actually, I just got finished reading about the therapeutic powers of play. When you say opens up, that's exactly what it does. It makes us more flexible. A lot of times when parents are struggling with, how do I help my children? You know, they're exhibiting these behavior issues and all of this. What do you do for play? How do you spend time together? That is the first thing that comes to my mind, because when someone's playing, they're more flexible and they're thinking, they're more in the middle of that rigidity, chaos continuum. Mm-hmm. They're open, they feel safe, they feel free to take risk. A lot of those behaviors diminish with play, or they're able to come into who they are. There's a neuroception of safety.
I think you're right. And I think a time portal opens in them where they are equally able, from EMDR language, to stay in the present, but access the past and the future, you know, and you see in that flexibility and that fluidity, this sense of timelessness, where those things all have permission to be in one space without overwhelming the system, to a place where defensiveness needs to show back up. And I love it. I feel so grateful to have this job and to have these conversations.
Yeah, certainly. Speaking of EMDR and your registered play therapist, and I know you do some trainings, you certainly do a lot of consultations where you integrate the two, and they are on their own. They're very, very amazing types of therapies. but when you integrate them, it's incredible. Can you talk a little bit about your work in terms of like EMDR, expressive arts, things of that nature, and play therapy?
Yeah, I think you and I are very compatible mm-hmm. in this area. I think you can hold to the fidelity of EMDR and just give way to the more nonverbal expressions of it, and with all ages. And so when I teach on sand, it's, you know, kind of going through the phases, looking at the different ways that it can spontaneously present in sand, or we can be more structured in our invitation. But, you know, in EMDR, even when you have a moment of structure, you're meant to get back out of the way as quickly as possible. So I think a lot of Adlerian play and what Terry Cotman brought into the world as a model for that. I think a lot of Eliana Gill and the way that she talks about blending those approaches as a model for that. And so I teach that in sand. And in the play world, I more talk about how as a vessel, as a therapist, can we start to integrate our clinical play theories with EMDR methodology and for that to feel at home within us so that we can be a real secure expression of the process with our clients. And so experiencing some playful integrations as we start holding together the two worlds. And then I teach about poetry, how to do that in play in general, but how to bring poetry into EMDR. Some of my clients will show up with the next target already written in poem form, and we're able to just go straight from that.
Yeah, the power of the metaphor is incredible. And when we look at EMDR, I mean, it surpasses the limitation of words, poetry, expressive arts. I think you make such a beautiful point when you talk about like staying in the unstructure of play to be able to really delve into that play therapy and how you can integrate it into the phases of EMDR without sacrificing any fidelity on either side. For those that's listening that may not be familiar with what EMDR therapy is, it's eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. And it has eight phases, and those eight phases are they each have an intention. And play therapy, expressive arts therapy, fits in there really nicely. Now, we're almost out of time, but I want to make sure that people know where to find you. They know where to get a membership for your miniatures, if that's something that they can use, and any trainings that you have. Just kind of share your information, please.
I will. Thank you. My website is marshalllyles.com. So in the middle are three L's. So you just got to really power through that and keep going. of all the L's. So Marshall Lyles, LYLES.com. And that will list my upcoming trainings. Like I said, I have some coming up on poetry and play and how reading and writing poetry and bringing it into your play therapy can transform your practice. On sand and EMDR and play in EMDR coming up in the next 6 months or so. There's also, you know, a blog where I write stories and some of my poetry there. And then there's a link to the other website, which is either therapistworkshop.com or marshallsminiatures.com, but you can get there from my first website that shows you the miniatures and tells you about the subscription and some of the books and things like that. And more than anything, it tells you how to be in contact with me. And so, you know, just dialogue or social media contact feels like a way to continue this conversation. Jackie, you've been so gracious to begin. I'm very honored to do that.
Oh, it's my honor. I know you provide consultation and supervision as well.
Yeah. In Texas, I'm an LPC and MFT supervisor, and I'm a play therapy supervisor and EMDR consultant. And so, you know, online and in person and do some groups and I do work with consultants in training for EMDR who are becoming approved consultants. Mm-hmm. All of those fun, our different part of our brain when we get to be in consultation and that more collegial environment is very feeding. It's a nice change of pace. So all of that's there on the website if anyone's interested in any of it.
Your trainings sound amazing. Your poetry, all of your trainings sound incredible. Your poetry one, I think I'm going to sign up for that one. I find myself getting emotional. I have clients over the years that's brought in poetry and like I start crying, I'm like, oh gosh, I need to kind of just really kind of put one foot into the present, but it can be really powerful. I would love to learn the specifics about how that looks directive wise and how it unfolds. How do you set it up? You are so talented. As you're talking, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this guy does everything. He not only teaches you how to do it, he makes the miniatures and he like guides you through use of it. And I mean, you are incredible. And I think that if that was a cognition, you know, it'd be a 0 to 7, it'd be a 7. That's right in my heart and my brain.
thank you, Jackie. I think really highly of you too. And I look forward to, you know, future collaborations. You and I get to have some fun together in the future.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I can't wait to visit your expressive art studio that I'm looking at, just the miniature wall. It's incredible. For those of you that are listening that would like to access the download that Marshall is providing, it'll be available at Play Therapy Members Community, or you can email me and I'll have it, whatever it takes to get it to you. All right. Thank you, Marshall. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Play Therapy Community Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode and explore our growing members library of play therapy related resources at www.playtherapycommunity.com. Prepare to be informed, equipped, inspired, and supported.